8:33 this Tuesday afternoon. Anna here on WGN. Okay, we were talking about the violence at the top of the show there, mentioning that this weekend 100 people shot, 14 killed, including several children as young as three. We had a Monday then followed up yesterday with 40 shootings and six people's lives lost. Just an unacceptable level of violence. Trying to come up with solutions, looking to Police Superintendent David Brown and others. David Brown is, Superintendent Brown's going to be meeting with some of the other justice officials this week. One of his complaints and concerns has been that violent felons are back on the street again after they arrest them. They go back into the communities and commit more crimes. He's trying to talk with officials about that. I've heard also he's going to be meeting with the top commanders and a lot of the senior members of the police department to see if there should be some sort of reorganization there. Certainly new strategies, because the other ones are not working. So that's a part of it. There's so much more to it, though. Father Flager's at St. Sabina's Church. He had a gathering last night to call for, it had some demands and called for some of this, the end to the violence. It's something you've dealt with time and time again, Father Flager, and thank you for joining us on WGN.
Thank you, Anna. Thanks very much. Yeah, it's, we got to face the fact, when you look at last weekend, and then all of a sudden yesterday, another 40, 41 shot. We're in a state of emergency in Chicago, and while we're talking about the pandemic of the virus, I mean, we've got the pandemic of the violence that's been going on long before. And I think, you know, with that, there's some things we've got to demand. I think number one is that the city and the county and the state be just as aggressive and with as many resources to deal with this, with the violence, as we are with the virus. It came in and everybody got together, everybody worked together, all the offices, the government got together and said, how are we going to come in and make sure people are safe? I think the same thing has to happen now. They all need to get in the room, the governor, the mayor, the President Preckwinkle, the state's attorney, U.S. attorney, police chief, get in the room and work this thing out, figure it out, and say, what do we, because what you just said, you know, what's happening is not working.
It's not. Let me ask you, though, the superintendent's suggestion that we are letting people out on these electronic monitoring devices or low bond or no bond when they're violent felons or they have a lengthy record, and that they are finding, even in this weekend's violence, they have not been able to announce names yet, but that some of those individuals were known to police in the past. Should they be being, should, is that the right way to go about it? Is the superintendent right that the violent felons should be?
My question. Yeah, I guess my response to that, but I'd want some evidence that these people out on bond are the ones causing these things, because, and I don't know how they can to just jump to that, because we are not catching people. You know, 2019, 80% of the homicides are not solved. We had a girl here yesterday, Tiana, who got shot May 31st. And as of yesterday, no police had even contacted. There was video, there was everything. Nobody contacted her yet until we made us think about yesterday. Now the detectives are reaching out. We had a young man shot in our parking lot and killed 3 months ago. We had video. They had a cell phone. They had who he was speaking to. All this information, nobody caught yet. So, you know, we're not solving crime, which is in homicides and shootings, which is a major problem to me. But while we're making those accusations about those back out, I want to know what is the proof that they are the ones creating this violence?
Because
if we're not,
I think for the reasons you know that they know who they are, but they don't have enough to get a case on them. And part of that is something you brought up before, and I hadn't heard you bring it up many times before, but I heard you bring it up yesterday, mm-hmm. that there is a code of silence, and we all understand about a code of silence, why that might be yep. detrimental to an individual to come forward very publicly and say, point out somebody who committed a violent crime, that they would fear retribution. But you're calling to break the code of silence, and there needs to be cooperation in order for police to find that.
People have got to speak. Blocks have to reconnect again. Grandmothers, mothers, aunties, fathers, uncles, if there's somebody in your house that you know is involved with this, you either got to curtail them, talk to them, change them, or you got to put them out. You can't be housing shooters in your house, and people know much more than they're willing to admit.
There you go.
People got to talk, but at the same time I say that, is that then as a police department, we've got to be able to protect people who are giving up. Remember that young lady not too long ago was shot and killed for testifying. There are ways that we can protect them, but, you know, if somebody calls in and says, I want to give you all this information anonymously, and then three unmarked cars show up at the person's house, that's not the way to help people be protected.
No.
So you've got to be able to find a way to get the people to be anonymous as they'd like to be and give up the information. And then, frankly, it's, you know, we got to start to grow these relationships back, because while community and police are not talking to each other, it doesn't help solve anything.
Well, you got to get the people in your community, too, willing to step up and talk to police and arrange something anonymously, too. I imagine
right.
There's got to be a way to do that. I mean, think about it. The 3-year-old child who was shot and killed in that car had just
right.
went to get his hair cut with his stepdad. On
Absolutely.
The way back, he was shot and killed. The stepfather is not cooperating with police.
Right. That's unacceptable, because
so
he,
they'll not
in
find
my
that
mind,
killer, because he knows who it is. And
yeah.
He knows who it is. He saw it happen. He's an eyewitness. His stepson was
He's
killed.
He's not only an eyewitness. He's, in my mind, a co-conspirator, because he knows. He knows who did it and going to keep silent about it. So in my mind, you're a co-conspirator. There's got to be a way to charge people as part of the conspiracy if you know and you're harboring a criminal. But I think that, you know, the other side of that coin, though, I think is right. People got to talk, and we got to find places. And many times people come here and meet with police here and give them information. But the other side of that, when we have information on these two cases I just mentioned, then you got to do something with it. We've got to follow through and arrest people and not just let it slip through. And many times I'll have police officers tell me, well, we're just so overbogged with cases, we just can't focus on one case. Well, whatever we need to do to change that, we need to get people to talk. We need to protect their willingness, their safety, and then we got to be able to solve the cases when people are talking. Because in these two cases, you know, people are begging to give information. When this young man was shot in the lot, I asked the detective, hey, he had somebody he was talking to minutes before this happened. You can go to his apartment because he lives in our building. You can talk to his neighbors. They said, oh, we don't want to do any of that.
I want to go back to the, I'm sorry, Father, it's Steve in the newsroom, but go back to the stepdad who's not cooperating with the death, with the shooting of the 3-year-old. And if you're in that stepdad's, you're driving that car, you know that if you do cooperate, you may well be shot yourself. I mean, how do you make that person step up when they might be putting their own lives at risk?
Well, here's something I've been saying for about, 3-4 years now. One of the things that I was told to my face about 4 years ago, that, for instance, if Steve, you are giving up information and you're afraid of your life at risk, that there is a way that we can protect you by moving you out of town. So, well, how do you do that? It's a lot of money. It's expensive. No. Section 8 vouchers can be exchanged between cities. So let's say, Steve, you have family in Dallas. And you say, well, I have family down there. All right, we're going to call Dallas. We're going to get a Section 8 voucher for Dallas, and have you move down there, and then we'll give Section 8 to Dallas to have somebody move back up here. So there are ways we can protect people and help people in their privacy and not have them be vulnerable to being shot or killed, while at the same time getting them to give information up.
Have you suggested that? Is that something that they're considering?
I've been suggesting that to the city for probably the last 4 years.
And are there other ways for them to be anonymous at all?
There is.
The community, staying within their network of family and friends?
Well, here's one of the things I've been asking people to investigate into. So many times the police will tell you, well, you have to be able to point them out of court. Sometimes people will give enough information, give enough details that the police can then, if they do the police work, can bring up and not even have that person come into court. But let's say, Anna, you have to come to court. They say, well, you're going to have to point Mike Flager out in the courtroom. You're afraid about doing that. Why can't we put up screens and have people in boxes of not having to go to, so that the lawyers can see that who it is doing it, but it can be protected from the person who they're identifying and protected for the people in the courtroom. There's got to be ways that we can think out of the box to allow people to come forward, give information, and still be protected. I just think we got to be more creative than we are.
And if ever there was a time to do that, it seems right now, especially since they've figured out how to Zoom call for different court cases. And, you know, we figured out a technology piece of this that we didn't have before.
Anna, they can tell you who you talked to this morning, yesterday, the day before, with all the technology and all the stuff that they already know that we probably don't even know about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they can figure out a way to do this.
Yeah, I hope they listen. I think that, you know, you're offering solutions, you're offering ideas, and that's what's needed right now. Because as we said, the way we're doing this now, the approach we have had, we're proving that it's not. When you lose a 3-year-old, a 13-year-old girl sitting on her inside her home,
yeah,
watching television.
But, you know, the numbers this weekend and the numbers yesterday, these are war numbers. These aren't city numbers. These are war numbers. If we had 100 people, soldiers shot over in Afghanistan or Iran, do you know what the kind of call to action would be?
Hmm.
You know, we've got to be aggressive. We've got to be resources, and we got to think creatively, because we've got to try something. There are things we can do that we are just not doing yet. And that's why I said, get all these folks in a room and work it out. That's what we're paying you for. Figure it out, and then put up some strategy.
I was so sad about all of this, but I saw an interview with one of the moms. It was either the 16 or the 17-year-old boy that were walking home. They
yes.
went to the convenience store to get candy, I believe, and then they're on their way home. They made it all the way to their backyard. We're just about to get inside when they were both shot and killed. And the mom said, I tell my son that he should not go out at night because I don't allow it, and because of the violence and the worries I have about guns. And she said that she made an exception that night and allowed him to do it. These are not gang members, these two young men.
Right.
These are not involved. They don't have that background. And
right.
that's what happened.
And, you know, I remember in the whole, when Michelle Obama was first lady, the whole campaign, get off the computers, go outside and do exercise and play ball. And I can't tell you how many parents say, I have to tell my children, no, that's not true. Stay in, watch TV, play in the computer, play your games, because if you go out, you may get killed.
Yeah. And it just struck me as a mom. I just thought, oh, my God, here's a mom
yeah.
who tells her kid not to play outside at night, not even walk outside to a store at night. And
yeah.
then the one time she makes an exception for him and his friend to go get candy, that happens. That's why you got to help those kids. I mean, my gosh, there has to be a way.
But imagine growing up with that kind of a trauma, you know, being told it's safe, unsafe outside your front door. Every night, so you got to stay in. Don't be in the front room or the front of the house, because a bullet could come through and kill you there. Imagine what it does to a child's emotional, you know, the damage it does from day one to grow up like that. And that's why we have to change this, because somehow, you know, it's war zone. So I feel I'm not safe in my house, then the same parents are telling their child, if you ever get stopped by police, put your hands on the dashboard, don't say anything, be calm, be quiet. So you can't trust the police, you can't trust your community. I mean, imagine being affected like that growing up, the kind of damage it does.
Yeah, I can't, and I see it, and I don't like it, and I feel like there are ways that we can find solutions to this, and we have to.
Yeah, there are, and I don't think we're being creative enough, and I think it's time to do it. It's time to say, all the egos aside, you know, all the money we've been putting in these areas aside, and say, let's come up with the creative new things and try it. For God's sake, at least try it, because we're losing lives of children. Children are becoming roadkill in this city.
Mm-hmm. I just want to ask, you just mentioned something about funding. Are the defund the police movement, are you on board with any of that in any form? What would you say about that, Father?
Well, I am, and I'll tell you in this way. I think a lot of people think defund the police is, you know, stop paying police, stop giving. It's not that. Defund police basically means let's look at the budget, because we're spending all this money, I mean millions and millions and billions of dollars, and yet we have some of the highest violence in the country. So let's say, how do we better, what are more creative things we can do to this budget? What are some other ways? Bring in some both community people, as well as bring in some folks who have seen this work successfully around the country, and say, what are some other things, ways we can approach and can try? So it's not saying, you know, take the money away from the police department, no longer support police. No, it's not that at all. It's saying, let's look at the budget. Is there some better spending of the money that we're doing right now? And the same thing with other government contracts throughout there. If it's not producing results, if it's not affecting lives, then maybe they shouldn't be giving that money.
I mean, I agree with the review of all this. Did you see what the mayor said? Mayor Lightfoot was just interviewed about that and said that 90% of the police budget is personnel. So you'd be cutting officers. That's what you'd have to do in order to cut it, essentially. And she said that if the way the rules are now, you'd go from the, you know, the top, the bottom up, the least seniority up, which would be a lot of the new hires, which are very more black and brown police officers. And she said that's a gateway to the middle class,
right.
And being a police officer, and she's not on board with this at all, because she just thinks, be careful what you're doing. And then removing police officers from the communities that actually need the police.
Yeah. No, I did not hear that, but I mean, I understand that completely, but Anna, there's a whole lot of money. We have an $18 million TIF to help the Blackstone, you know, hotel, a $25 million TIF to help with the renovation of the United Airlines headquarters. I mean, we can spend money a whole lot more wisely.
Mm-hmm. Father Flake, I appreciate your time. And aren't you doing something this week? Is there something else you have going on?
Well, we're going to look to, we, I don't know if it's going to be this weekend. We want to do something else before the July 4th weekend, because if we had this last weekend, my God, what's July 4th weekend going to be if we don't come together in some kind of a unity voice?
How about it? I appreciate time. Thanks, Father.
Thank you so much. You be blessed. Take care. It's-